In the United States, domestic violence incidents involving guns are on the rise, and women are especially vulnerable. When a domestic abuser has access to a firearm, it's 5 times more likely that the victim will be killed. According to the Giffords Law Center, nearly 1 million women alive today report being shot or shot at by an intimate partner. And 4.5 million women say that an intimate partner has threatened them with a gun. And while the terms domestic violence or intimate partner violence can encompass all kinds of abuse, the fact remains that women are at the highest risk of being harmed or killed by a firearm, by a male spouse or partner, according to Every Town for Gun Safety Support Fund. All this week on The Takeaway, we're going to explore the link between domestic violence and firearms. We'll hear from a survivor whose husband nearly ended her life when he shot her 4 times, and what she wants people to know about her experience. We'll also learn about the legal landscape of self-defense when abused women turn guns on their partners, fearing for their lives. And we'll look at states taking creative new approaches to taking firearms away from those who might use them to kill a partner. But first, to understand what we know about this problem, I spoke to Julia Weber, Implementation Director at the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. I asked her why we've seen this spike in the number of women being murdered by a partner who has a firearm.
Part of it is we are studying the connection between firearms and domestic violence, hopefully more effectively, documenting it and developing a better understanding of the connection. So that's significant. We also know that there has been an increase in gun ownership in the United States. And just last year, we have a study that indicates that higher rates of gun ownership are associated with higher rates of homicide in domestic violence situations. So there's possibly a connection there. You know, it's a difficult area to study, but it is absolutely of concern, and hopefully we're doing a better job documenting the problem.
It sounds like this involves, on one hand, simply more guns in the population, but also more people reporting this kind of violence.
More people reporting and just a better job documenting it. I mean, part of the issue is when somebody is shot or killed, how is that documented? How do we collect that data? How do we report it out and so forth? So, you know, there are still some questions, for example, around suicide and firearms and how often we can really understand that someone is taking their own life. As opposed to perhaps, you know, dealing with a domestic violence situation or, you know, in response to ongoing emotional abuse, for example. So it might get listed as a suicide, but if you did some further inquiry, we could discover that it was connected to domestic violence, for example. So, you know, we have to, it's a very isolating experience, domestic violence is. Intimate partner violence often goes unreported. And so just improving how we collect the data, how we report it out is critical to the discussion as well.
So what does the data tell us about how often women are killed by intimate partners using guns?
Well, the statistics indicate that every year, 600 American women are shot to death by intimate partners. So that's significant. And in fact, we know that of all women shot to death by others in the U.S., half were shot by their intimate partners. We also know that the death toll extends to mass shootings. In about 54% of mass shootings, which are defined as a situation where 4 or more people were killed, the shooter killed an intimate partner. So when we learn about other types of gun violence, we have to also be considering what the relationship might have been between the shooter and at least 1 or more of the people killed. A lot of people don't know that most mass shootings happen entirely within a home under that definition. So family violence, intimate partner violence, firearm violence, mass shootings, all very tightly connected.
Are states that have lax gun laws more prone to higher rates of gun-related domestic violence?
There does seem to be an indication that having tighter gun laws are correlated with reduced homicide rates associated with domestic violence. So we know that background checks, for example, are very good at stopping abusers from getting guns. Our statistics indicate that 1 in 9 background check denials are connected to domestic abuse. And over 300,000 domestic abusers have been blocked from buying guns by the federal background check system since its inception. We know that in states that do a better job prohibiting domestic abusers from having access to firearms. There's a decrease in injury and lethality. You know, one of the interesting statistics to me is that nearly 1 million women alive today report being shot or shot at by an intimate partner.
Wow.
So part of the issue, it's not just a lethal outcome we're concerned about. We also know there are people living today with injuries, threats associated with intimate partner violence and firearms. So the more we can do to address that connection between firearms and domestic violence, I think the better off families will be.
Policy plays a pretty significant role in curbing domestic violence homicide, but are the new red flag laws showing any positive results?
So red flag laws, as they're often called, or extreme risk protection orders, ERPOs for short. In California, they're called gun violence restraining orders, are the newest civil restraining order approach to trying to reduce the harm associated with firearms when someone is going through a crisis or maybe a danger to themselves or to others. And there is some research suggesting that ERPOs do a lot to reduce the risk associated with firearms violence when someone is going through a situation like that, to temporarily remove guns for safekeeping, to protect that individual and to protect others.
So, Julia, where do things stand right now?
I think the increased awareness of the connection between firearms and domestic violence is critical so that we can inform victims and survivors of the risk. They may be very intimately familiar with what they're experiencing, the relationship, but knowing that the presence of firearms increases the risk for themselves, for their children, for the community at large, that's an important piece of information for them. It's an important piece of information for those of us in the public health world and in the legal community to do the right screening, ask the right questions, provide appropriate referrals and support so that we can more proactively intervene and prevent lethal outcomes or injury for family members and for all of us.
Julia Weber is the implementation director at the Giffords Law Center to Prevent Gun Violence. Thanks so much, Julia.
Thank you very much.
If you or someone you know is affected by intimate partner violence and needs help, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE for support in English or Spanish. That's 1-800-799-7233. More in our series on guns and domestic violence tomorrow. It's The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.